Welcome everyone to OnChain Alpha. This is a weekly podcast where we explore the world of on-chain data with the people who are building the tools, writing the threads, really engaging with you in terms of what Web3 data looks like in the future. Make sure to sign up to our newsletter, which is at cryptosapiens.xyz. Want to thank some of the supporters that make this podcast possible, starting with Mosaic, the Optimism Collective, and Bankless DAO. Today, we're going to be talking to Renee. We're going to be focusing on Silk, which is a fully embeddable account management tool, or at least that is how I understand it. Renee, why don't you give us an introduction firstly to you and then to Silk?
Yeah, happy to, Humpty. Hey, everybody. Renee Davis. I am a social scientist, builder, DeSci lover, working in this space, mostly building and working for DAOs. So over the last few months, I've had an exciting opportunity to work with a new project called Silk, which is built by some really good friends of mine and DeSci builders I really respect in the space. And I'm super excited to get into that more.
Yeah, so I think for anybody who's been in this space for any amount of time, at least in the DeSci space specifically, you are no stranger. At least I think that that's true. And if you don't know who Renee is, then are you really in DeSci? I've seen your contributions across so many projects, I can't even count them. It's really exciting to see you just bring your talents to this space. No pun intended. We can talk about Talent DAO briefly because that's really how I first met you and the work that you're doing in this space. And now, you know, with Silk. So can you give us, I guess, maybe an introduction to just your contributions to Talent DAO and how that's continued through Silk?
Yeah, sure. So Talent DAO was a 2021 era DAO project. And they set out to do decentralized research, both funding and publishing. And we built a community of several thousand. And last year funded a little over, I think, $100,000 of various grants. We took on a lot of research interns. We had actually one person get into grad school and used a DAO recommendation letter for the research program. So that was kind of really cool to see. And we continue to do stuff. We do some grants. We're building a little bit in infrastructure now, exploring some AI tools as most are. And yeah, it's sort of turned into something that is more of a nonprofit, and it allowed me to kind of create space for my next thing, which is what kind of led me to Silk. And this collaboration goes back a while because, you know, Shadi Eldamati and is one of the co-founders of Silk. And maybe you've heard of Holonom, which I think is important to talk about Holonom today because it's part of that story. But this collaboration goes back years. I have been collaborating on different reputation projects, different proof of residency is something we looked at. So I've been working with Holonom for a couple years now in the DeSci space, both at Talent DAO, also at Lobby 3 for a time being. So it's just really exciting to kind of come on a more full-time capacity to see what's really under the hood and what they're working on.
Yeah, I really like both what you've said about Talent DAO and your contributions there. Also, the contributions Talent DAO generally has made into the ecosystem. You touched on Holonom. Agreed, I think that you've been really busy and helpful in the reputation space. One of the things I built a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, was Orange Protocol. And I remember at that time, you were putting down a lot of, thought leadership down on paper, if you will. You were sharing a lot of your thoughts, which was very helpful to us building Orange Protocol. And I think even collaborate with Talent DAO and Orange Protocol. What are your thoughts in terms of like digital identity and reputation in this space since you've talked about Holonom a bit here, and maybe also we can leverage that to talk about Silk?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're starting to see reputation consolidate a little bit, and it's through the fruition of this consolidation is like the on-chain point system, right? Everybody's getting into on-chain points. They have, identity sort of aggregator layers like Disco. And you're seeing that I think there's starting to be more of a universal agreement on what points looks like on chain. With that said, there's still not a great application layer for reputation and identity. So I'm hoping to see more applications come out over the next like year, year and a half, where we have, you know, profile explorers. We have different ways to calculate points on chain that empowers the user to sort of mint their own verified credentials. I would love to see just more permissionless systems like that in general. And I would also like to see more creative reputation metrics for DAO behavior specifically. I think there's a lot of like social media reputation metrics. There's not a lot of great reputation data to look at like DAO delegates, DAO voting behavior, things like that, DAO contributions. I don't think we fixed that problem just yet. So in many ways, we're still kind of where we were in 2021, which is, you know, frustrating, right? But then there's also is some consolidation, and I think that's a good thing. And we're starting to see very large collaborations on on-chain point systems. I'm in a working group with probably 20 other projects working on an on-chain point system for Ceramic, which will be really interesting. So I think like over the next probably 12 months, you'll start to see more movement in the digital identity space.
Yeah, so I was actually going to talk a bit about that with Ceramic, because I was leading a panel at Proof of Data, which was hosted by Ceramic and Tableland. And first of all, I thought I was being quite innovative introducing a panel on points. I didn't realize that there were going to be so many people talking about points at ETH Denver. It just seemed like the meta. I personally thought it was going to be account abstraction that's was going to be the key topic of interest, but there was a lot of talk about points. With that said, you know, one of the things that I was pleased to learn is the work that Ceramic is doing with trying to build an open framework for off-chain points, right? To enable more interoperability across point systems. You know, I brought three speakers up with me, and just to kind of draw some tension to the conversation early, I asked everybody what their thoughts were of like where points should live. Should they live on-chain or off-chain? And three quarters, myself included, said on-chain. The only person that said off-chain, no surprise, was the person I brought up from Ceramic. I did that intentionally because I knew already going in of the work that Ceramic has been doing in the space of points, using off-chain data. So I wanted Rohan, who is the product lead over there at Ceramic, to convince us, right, through the conversation, why we should think about like off-chain point systems. I wonder if you have any insights into that specifically or just generally, in terms of like leveraging points off-chain for interoperable systems, and maybe even talk about like reputation in the ways that you've discussed for DAOs that need to evolve.
Yeah. So this is a really interesting conversation, right? Because there's probably, you know, most people disagree with me and that the meta right now is on chain. I saw a tweet from Coinbase and the Base protocol that said that they did a bunch of consumer research and said that on chain is like the perfect way to describe Web3. Like, don't call it Web3, don't call it crypto. It's all on chain. I am working on mostly off-chain tools right now. I'm building like data ETL tools off-chain. I'm building a Web3 forum off-chain. And I'm building this point system off-chain. I think that most of the use cases in crypto don't require immutability, don't require like highly expensive data storage, which is, you know, it's expensive to store data on the blockchain, even layer two. We're talking about, you know, mass scales of data if we really want to be able to take on the bandwidth of the internet. So I am very bullish on off-chain systems. I think it's sort of inefficient to think of it as like on versus off-chain, right? In many ways, Ceramic is still a publicly verifiable ledger. Right, all the data models are running on decentralized nodes. There's a way to verify a transaction, and it's publicly available. They pin stuff through IPFS, so they're far more on chain compared to like, you know, OpenSea or Snapshot and some of those other like systems that we think of like, you know, using our wallet with it just because we're interacting with it doesn't make it on chain. And just because it's off-chain doesn't make it less useful. So I think my take's a bit controversial, but I am most concerned with onboarding as many scientists and consumers as possible. And the only way to do that is to build with the most scalable infrastructure. And I just don't see layer twos delivering on that just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of back you up on this and saying that like Coinbase and Base have, you know, obviously a bias towards on-chain, obviously. They're running, you know, a blockchain, so it would obviously benefit them to say that, right? Also agree with you in terms of like things that need immutability obviously can live on chain and probably should live on chain, but there is a lot to say for the efficiencies of off chain. Having worked with decentralized identity protocols for years now, I realize the value of primitives that remain interoperable. So I think, yeah, the work that Ceramic is doing and for a variety of use cases, there's a lot of value for working with off-chain. So 100% agree with you there. Well, I guess moving on and maybe touching on something more specific in terms of what we intended, at least initially, to talk about. Tell me about Silk. Like, I was going through the documents and one of the first things I think I read, it's like, don't call it a wallet, right? It's much more than a wallet. Describe to me, what is Silk? And what makes it more than a wallet, and what makes it better than maybe most of the wallets that we use today?
Yeah, great question. So I think to describe Silk, we really need to go back about 2 to 3 years and talk about Holonom. And Silk is really sort of the culmination of UI UX experiences that Holonom had to deal with building zero knowledge identity protocols. So what Holonom is they allow you to mint certain proofs, credentials about yourself. They do like a government ID that you can privately mint a proof about your identity. They do a phone number verification. So they do like a ton of security and like civil resistance for grant programs like Gitcoin as well as others. And they built Silk to kind of make ZK identity better and make it more efficient and make it more secure. After working in identity for as long as they had, they sort of discovered that it made a lot of sense for identity to operate within a wallet. And that's sort of what Silk became to fruition. And the reason they say don't call it just a wallet is because it has all of this zero knowledge proof primitives built into it, all this identity management built into it that you just don't see for a lot of wallets. If we're comparing it directly to wallets, there's also a few unique features I really like about it that I think makes it unique. The first is definitely the trustless wallet recovery. Silk is very simple to use. It's, you know, so easy your grandma can use it. And the way it is just an email and a password to log in. And we actually save an encrypted part of your private key that you can use to recover your password. And you can sign a ZK proof using your government ID to be able to do that. So you actually don't even need to manage your seed phrase anymore. And the way we do that is with multi-party computation. So we're actually splitting your seed phrase into little encrypted bits and sharing the keys with you. And you get enough to be able to recover your password. And we get enough to be able to recover your password. And it's a really cool system. I've been learning a ton about just like zero knowledge and multi-party computation. And it's a very like secure system to use. Distributing your keys makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I really like it a lot better than like social recovery. I actually had a social recovery wallet and my guardian lost their access to their wallet. So luckily, I had still access and it was able to move the funds to something else. But if I had lost my wallet and needed, like, I'm toast. So this is more of like a trustless wallet management system, which I think makes it far more secure and kind of superior to a lot of the other products you've seen.
So you've said a lot of things here that I want to break down because I think I understand some of it, I think. But maybe our audience won't. One of the first things that I think I heard you talk about was like being able to prove your identity using a government ID. One of the things that I've worked with in the past is like zero knowledge KYC, right? Where you're able to share some sort of like government issued identification. And then that gets hashed, and that hash is what's stored. And that is also what you can use to prove your identity in the future without necessarily revealing all the bits and pieces, you know, of your personal identifiable information. Is this then what's used with Silk in terms of being able to prove your identity, continuously, or do you need to show that government issued ID consist like regularly anytime you need to recover, for instance, your wallet?
Yeah, good question. So the way it works is you prove your identity by a really simple process. Just for those listening that might not know what Humpty and I are talking about right now, you get your phone out, you scan a picture of your ID front and back side. It verifies who you are through a third-party verification service. And then after that happens, a ZK proof is populated, and you sign that proof saying, I verified an ID, and your actual ID and all your personally identifiable information is never actually stored as part of the proof metadata or on-chain or anything like that. But what you do get is you get a soulbound token issued to you, and it's like a privacy token, and you can actually, when you're minting it, you can use a different wallet to pay for the transaction and then mint to a completely different wallet. So it can be a completely disconnected SBT from the wallet you purchased with. So people wouldn't even know what you were doing. You would just have that verification. And we have that integrated with Silk right now. So you can actually, if you mint your SBTs to your Silk wallet, you'll be able to see them pop up. And right now we have government ID, as well as phone, as well as proof of US resident. We do a lot of KYC as well. But to answer your question, you don't have to keep doing that. You just do it once, and then you have that SBT, and you can use that SBT to recover parts of the wallet. You can use it to prove different parts about yourself. I believe we actually have a Gitcoin passport stamp. So you can connect that and get several points. It's worth quite a bit. So that's like another added benefit.
That's rad. I mean, so you've kind of taken that same concept that I just described, and then you've kind of added another layer of accessibility, right? So to be fair, one of the things that I know, having worked both with off-chain and on-chain tools and developed off-chain and on-chain tools, one of the biggest arguments whenever we were building something that was primarily off-chain was like the accessibility for developers. Like that is not as familiar to many developers. So when it comes to composability, there's a layer of friction, if you will. So adding like an SBT would be something that is more familiar, more palatable, at least to many, to more Web3 developers, right? Maybe not to Web2 developers, because they're probably more familiar with the former and not the latter. That's really cool. Great to see that. I guess one of the things I wanted to understand too is like, so social recovery, that's something that is also not new, but it sounds like it's new in the way that Silk is approaching it. If I remember correctly, and I don't know the nuts and bolts of it, so I won't get too deep into it, but there was a time where there were products like Bright ID, and I'm sure you're familiar with them, where there was a social element to it where you enabled several trusted parties that were part of that social graph to verify your identity and help you recover a wallet. It sounds like this is less so a social component and more so a ZK component. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely more of a ZK component, and specifically multi-party computation. And I think like this is oversimplified. I'm definitely not a cryptographer or a ZK engineer. So if anyone on the Silk team's listening and I totally botched this, you know, let me know later. But I think a good way to sort of metaphorically compare them is like with social recovery, you're distributing access to your private keys, so to speak, or you're distributing access to like having privileges on your wallet. With multi-party computation, you're not distributing So you're not distributing access to users. You're actually distributing the keys themselves as little encrypted bits, and those are being distributed. And it uses a zero knowledge proof that you only need a little bit to recover your wallet. So right now we have two-party computation, just because Silk has, we're running it on one node. We have actually some exciting things we're working on to have a multi-node structure for our wallet, which would make it, you know, more decentralized and more, even more secure. So I'm excited for when those things come to fruition. But right now we manage it using two-party computation. So when you sign up for Silk and create a wallet, we get a very small encrypted bit of that key so that we can recover the wallet, the password for you if you need it.
I don't know why this is reminding me of this, and I could be completely wrong, but again, I'm just trying to make this as familiar as possible to our listeners. One of the things that this reminds me of is when you are downloading a piece of software and you're not just going to the website and downloading the executable, but you're actually downloading the code, and then you are recompiling that code, right? For those of us nerds who really want to download things and provably, and make sure that we're not downloading, you know, malware, you can do this. There's an option. Many software developers provide this option. And then once you're done downloading and recompiling, you can compare the hash between what you've compiled and of the software developer. And if it matches, then you can prove that that is the correct file that they've developed that you should be installing on your computer, and not something that a hacker has infiltrated and is trying to install on your computer that is not, you know, made by the manufacturer. So in this case, you're almost like developing an identity. Let's just keep it simple. And then you keep a copy of that hash or ZK. And then there is maybe some sort of like maybe there's a relationship between that and a ZK that is provided to someone else. And then if you ever need to prove that you are who you claim to be, you just need to compare those keys or the ZK with someone else's. I don't even know if I'm making this easier or harder. And then that way you could actually recover your identity. It makes sense to me in my head. I probably just made it worse.
No, I think that's super helpful. I was following along. So I think it's a good illustration.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're deep in the weeds in this stuff. And I think it makes sense to us. I just want to make sure that this is... as accessible to many people as possible. So now that we know, I guess, some of the things that make Silk different, what in terms of its use case, how people use Silk, right? In terms of how they interact with Silk and their applications or a protocol or a social application, let's call it Farcaster. What are, like, is it, how is it different? How is it similar?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's worth mentioning sort of one more feature that I always forget about, but I use it all the time. It's really cool. And that's sending crypto through an email. So I can actually, with just having your email address, I can send you ETH through Silk. I can do that on Polygon, Mainnet, Optimism, Gnosis, and you can go claim it. And then either sign in with the wallet or sign up with Silk if you don't have one yet. So that's really cool. I'm like crypto pilling people that way. I just sent like $5 on Polygon to my partner. I'm like sending it to different friends and they're like, what is this? Why are you sending me this? And they're having to sign up for Silk wallets to claim it. It's very great. So that's like a use case, right? It's so easy your grandma can use it. And the use case here is you're helping your onboard these like Web2 users and people that are not familiar with Ledger or MetaMask or some of these other like more complex wallet providers. You know, you're sending grandma a $25 gift card through Silk. And when they claim it, they sign up for a wallet. And now they have a Web3 account and can interact with the future of the internet the way they should have the ability to. Right. So that's a really interesting use case. I'm actually building a Web3 forum and like a discussion board, and I've integrated Silk. It's super simple to do. It takes less than 30 minutes. It took me about 45 just because I'm a bit of a noob with JavaScript. But the SDK for Silk is like super accessible. And then Holonym has an API, so you can check any of the SVTs and credentials on chain. So it's really like simple sort of ecosystem to interact with as a developer, which is great as well. But I think like what we're really targeting is those like mass adoption of Web2 users, and really going after like the consumer level, which is really exciting. And that's why it's been so important for us to create features that they're familiar with, like password recovery or using just an email for login and things like that.
You know, I have a couple of questions. So I want to make sure I go back to these because I thought that they were quite important. The first one, the email, funds. I think that that's really cool. I mean, so one of the things I think you said early in terms of the way that Silk works is you can sign up using your email. So that makes sense that there's a connection there. I definitely think that, you know, we need to build more accessibility rails into traditional Web2 systems. So that's really rad to see that Silk has integrated in that way. The other one is in terms of the funds, once you claim them, what are some of the ways for example, if you were to send me some funds, not asking for them, but hey, I'll take them, to my email, like, and I sign up and I claim these funds, how can I use them today? Is it just the way I would most traditional Web3 wallets, like signing in and transacting that?
Yeah, exactly. So Silk can do any website, any Web3 app that has Wallet Connect. It connects to that. I use it to connect to my Safe app. I'm using it for like, I did a Uniswap swap on it the other day. I even tested out Hop Exchange, and was able to like bridge some ETH to Polygon within the wallet. So anything you would expect, Silk can do.
Let's get Starbucks integration. And not shilling Starbucks here, but just because I think that's probably a recognized brand for a lot of people. I like the idea that it's easy for grandma to use it and claim it, but then how can she spend it? I want to see the entire workflow be super simple. So that's not just a Silk thing. I think that's just generally a wallet thing. I'd love to see more integration with traditional payment systems too. I know that that is usually a regulatory or some sort of legal thing, but I really would love to see, it sounds like Silk is also on the forefront of a lot of these like ways of making things much more private, secure, and accessible. I think it just might be in their wheelhouse if they wanted to take that on. So I guess like, what are some of the, ways that Silk is looking to continue to grow, evolve, integrate into the space more deeply? Maybe we could even touch on, after you've said maybe the two, three things that Silk is doing now, how you also foresee decentralized social playing in to the way that Silk operates.
Yeah, those are a lot of great questions. So I think where Silk is sort of wanting to go and focus on is definitely building our developer ecosystem. My specific role is developer relations. So like that's something I've really been charged with, is to build out that part of the community, and hosting the Hacker House and sort of getting that bootstrapped was a big part of that. That was our first ever event we did. And I think it went really well. We have about 30 developers sort of very active in a Telegram group. I met with two of them today. They have like different use cases they're building with Silk and things like that. So that's definitely my priority. Another like immediate priority, just to like plug it, is that Holonym and Silk are actually very quickly this month closing on their fundraising round. So, you know, there's definitely opportunities for accredited investors and people like that to reach out and get involved, because they're doing really well with that. Very excited for them to make their announcements on their deal structures that they've closed. And then the third thing I think we're really focused on is just getting the fundamentals down. We have an open beta product, but we really want to further sort of battle test it, battle harden it, make sure it has every single feature you would expect as like table stakes for a product to interact in Web3. And then start to really build out some of those additional capabilities like you're talking about. Like, I think it would be super cool to have like NFC-based, you know, tap payment things like that, integration with like a Visa or MasterCard or something. We are working on NFC-based passport verification. So you can actually generate a ZK proof just by sitting your phone on your passport. So maybe we take that a step further and get into payments and things like that. That's certainly an option.
Wow. See, I knew that the challenge wouldn't be too tough, just based on how you've described what Silk is doing and, you know, how far they've come. And this is pre-fundraise. I mean, that's quite impressive. Yeah, I mean, all of these things. I think NFC is underutilized. Definitely like to see all the different innovative ways that that's kind of starting to be integrated into the Web3 space. I think probably the most familiar for anybody listening, NFC POAPS probably is the one that I've seen most, is you tap your phone near this like IYK app receiver, and then you're able to mint a POAP. But I mean, I think that there's a lot of opportunity for continuing to extend on that technology and that integration and payments, peer-to-peer payments, I think would be really cool. You're next to your friend, you know, just tap each other's phones and you're able to just send funds. I know my family and I dine out regularly with friends. It'd be nice to be like, oh, we're splitting the bill, just tap each other. It's another way to pill people too, right? Going beyond your email, just sending them to them directly. That's really cool. So in terms of like data, right? So let's try to bring this back into kind of like the topic, or at least the theme for On-Chain Alpha. We talked about off-chain, on-chain. We talked about the integration, the work that you're doing over at Ceramic. In terms of like Silk, what are some of its implications to the data ecosystem, whether it be off-chain or on-chain, and the interoperability of it?
Yeah, so Silk's core infrastructure is on Optimism right now. We also just deployed to Near. So all of our SBTs that we issue as part of our ZK proofs are all verifiably on chain. I don't see that changing. I think, you know, out of everything I talked about, having that private identification on chain is actually really important for what we're doing. So that's not going to go away. We actually participated in the retroactive public goods rounds with Optimism. And I can't remember exactly where Hollandum ranked, but they were very high up, like certainly in the top 200 projects donated. I actually think maybe in the top 150 out of over 600 projects. So we were really like obviously very humbled and appreciative of that very like awesome retroactive reward for the work we're doing. At any given day in like a 30-day rolling period, we're actually usually in like the top 10. Biggest like fee producer on Optimism. Like we are guzzling up transactions and gas and keeping up with most projects. There's very few projects on Optimism actually that produce more fees than us. I think like WorldCoin is one that's doing a bit better, and obviously like the protocol itself, right? But we are generating like a lot of on-chain revenue from that, and contributing sort of to like the open data economy by providing like a test bed of verifiable wallets that you can analyze. I actually am working on a bit of an experiment right now where I queried all the SBT holders for phone verification. It's about 7,000 or so. And we're able to pull their snapshot data. So now I have a civil resistant trust network looking at their voting behavior on snapshot for DAOs. So there's just like so many interesting things you can do with the data. And I love that it's like something that's just we're passively contributing to in such a meaningful way.
Wow. I mean, I think that goes way beyond what I was expecting personally in terms of like the composability of that data. Also, you talked about like building this graph, if you will, of civil resistance, right? Provable humanity through governance participation. Just generally, I guess, what are some of the things that really excite you the most about open data? You know, it doesn't have to be specifically to the work that you're doing now, but it could be. It sounds like you're busy, not just, you know, contributing to projects like Silk, but also kind of running some of your own experiments.
I'm certainly always experimenting I am never not doing some sort of research or like data analysis, looking at like on or off chain data. But I guess in the context of Silk, I'm really excited to see if I can identify meaningful differences between our SBT holders versus like the larger Web3 population of wallets. I want to be able to demonstrate that Silk users are more likely to get airdrops. They're more likely to vote. They're more likely to give to Gitcoin. They're more likely to be engaged on chain. I want to be able to like really prove that. So that's what I'm working on right now. I actually put together a little mercenary team of analytics people, and we're cooking up some really cool stuff. We're going to really have some interesting metrics to really back up Silk and Holonom, what they're doing, and really kind of like prove that not only are they generating on-chain revenue and providing these open data sets, they're actually like very significant data sets to academic science.
I mean, that's super interesting, super valuable. I guess anything else that like you'd like to talk about in terms of the work that you're doing or Holonom specifically, because I think you've called them out several times and it sounds like they're the builders of Silk. How has maybe your view of like the work that Holonom has changed, improved, maybe it hasn't, or maybe more specifically, how have they personally evolved their thinking since you started contributing to them?
Yeah. So I think that my impression of Holonom is that they were initially a ZK issuer and like verifier and more of a protocol. And they still are those things. But I think what their pivot was is they got into the business of applications. So now they're doing the application layer too and creating that more of like an actual UI UX experience for interacting with their protocol. And the culmination of trying to get that right on kind of a customer by customer basis has evolved into what Silk is. So Silk is about a little over 12 months old. It was in private alpha up until just a couple months ago. So we've been in open beta for less than 60 days, maybe less than 40. And I think we reached like 10,000 users very quickly. So that's super exciting. We also just launched version 3 of Holonom, which is sort of just a more optimized, improved version of our proofs. They're about 100 times faster and less expensive computationally. So there's just a lot going on, and I've seen them sort of really mature and also just expand their presence. I think they're really well known in DeFi, but they're also like starting to get a lot of institutional interest from larger like Web3 projects, which is really nice to see. So overall, like my impression is that they are maturing and getting into the application business, which is exciting to see.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's what I saw happening a lot last year. Maybe not a lot, but I saw more of it happening last year. A lot of this protocol level stuff, kind of maybe shifting, refocusing to more application level stuff. I think the meme is that Web3 is just full of these protocols, infrastructure, but there's really nothing or not a lot being built in the space of applications to use these protocols and infrastructure, right? Like everybody builds the blockchain, but there's really nothing you can do on these blockchains. So I think that there's a lot of value to refocusing on the consumer side of things. And I think for anybody who's been following the space for the last couple of months, maybe year, the words consumer crypto will sound familiar because it talks more about like the application of the application level of crypto versus like just, you know, the things that maybe run some innovative or maybe repetitive, better said, ways of like interacting with the blockchain. So it's really great to see, you know, Holonom taking a step back, looking or assessing what they've built and trying to find a way to enable people to use that much more easily, or at least in a way that's provides a lot more value to them and to the ecosystem at large.
Yeah, definitely. Just in terms of how their perspectives maybe changed a little bit since I've started working there, I think one thing I really respect about the founders is they're very open to feedback and very quick to adapt. So they've been really receptive to all of my ideas on how to build the developer ecosystem. Very open to like grant programs and like quadratic matching funding and like coming up with creative ways to give back and build out their application in a more like community ground up way. So that's been really cool to see too.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. Anything else in terms of the consumer side of crypto that really excites you? Things that you would like to see happening in the next year or so? I know it's really hard to forecast beyond a year because this space constantly changes. Anything you personally would like to see in the consumer side, maybe related to data as well?
Yeah, so I really like what Rain Cards is doing. They let you connect. They basically let you create like a collateralized credit card, or you can just use it as a debit card and just load it up. And you can connect a wallet or like a multi-sig to it. And it's a Visa card. I use it all the time. I use it for work. I use it for like my infrastructure, ongoing payments. And it's really good. It's a bit cumbersome to like reload the card. And they're only accepting stablecoin. They're only on a few networks. I would like to see more things like that. You know, maybe Silk gets a partnership or something with Visa and we start doing payments. But more applications that let me use my crypto in like a fiat setting. We really, really need that, especially if we want to get this next wave of users. I talk to a lot of my friends who are very curious about what I do, but they are not interested at all in having to sign like a dozen signatures every time they do one little thing. So we really need to like reduce the friction for using wallets before we can get there.
Yeah, the payment ecosystem definitely is ripe for disruption. I think that there's a lot of really interesting experiments being, kind of done at this moment. Rene, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Honestly, I think anybody who listened from beginning to end will realize that what I said at the start wasn't exaggerated. You're consistently contributing, adding value, thinking hard about some of these problems in this, in the data space, at least that's as far as I have worked with you on, and looking for novel kind of solutions to it. I'm really excited to see the work that you're doing at Silk and definitely looking forward to seeing how some of these experiments that you're leading continue to play out.
Yeah, definitely. Always a pleasure, Humpty. It was great to catch up and excited to see the episode later on. And I'm just very excited to be building right now. It's a good time.
Rad. Well, any links here you want to drop in terms of where people can find you, where people can go and start playing with Silk today?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on pretty much everything at Rene Daos, just my name, Daos, Twitter, Discord, Telegram, Farcaster, you name it. And to play with Silk, the website is silk.sc. If you want to go learn more and read their docs, to go to the actual application to use, it's silksecure.net.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for your time. It was wonderful to connect with you again.
Thanks so much.